She said that grief is not an emotion, it's an experience. And part of that experience are our emotions. And we tend to focus on the emotions of depression and shock. And you know, the common five or seven that we've been taught, right? But there's also bliss. There's also elation. There's also release. There's also compassion on a deeper level than we've ever felt before. So now when I think about grief, I think of it less as an emotional experience, but an experience that encompasses all of our human emotions.
This is the When You Die podcast. If it has to do with death and dying, we're talking about it. I'm Johanna Lunn, your host today.
With me today is the grave woman, Joelle Simone Anthony. Joelle is a licensed funeral director, embalmer, sacred grief practitioner, end-of-life educator, and YouTube vlogger. Joelle was born in Europe and raised in Beaufort, South Carolina, the heart of Gullah and Geechee culture. Her professional approach is deeply rooted in ancestral wisdom passed down generation to generation. Spirituality, the sacredness of death, caring for those in transition, and supporting her community through grief have always been an important part of her life. You can find her right now talking with me and at her website, thegravewoman.com. I am so happy to be talking to you, Joelle, partly because I'm a big fan of your advocacy and your education and the little I understand of the way that you approach death care. Truly a compassionate person, I think, as someone on the planet, like so many of us that have had significant losses, I know what a difference it can make to have a truly caring and compassionate and spiritual person help guide families in their time of need. So I'm really happy to be talking to you and just really a fan of all the things that you're doing. So I want to drill down a little bit on your experiences and where you come from, what you think is important going forward.
Well, firstly, thank you so much for your support of the work. It's so interesting when people say they're fans, because I'm like, what? I appreciate it. And I appreciate your support. So thank you for taking the time to learn more.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think one of the first things I'm just so curious about, being that you're from Beaufort, South Carolina, the heart of, and if I butcher this, I'm sorry, Gullah and Geechee culture.
Well, it's Beaufort, South Carolina.
Beaufort, well, right off the bat.
Beaufort, South Carolina, and it's Gullah and Geechee culture. Oh. So Beaufort, South Carolina is a part of the Port Royal Sound. And I don't know how much you know about the Port Royal Sound, but historically, about 98%, the last time I looked, of African Americans in this hemisphere, not just in the United States, I've misquoted that several times, but in this hemisphere, the Northern Hemisphere, our lineage can be traced to the Port Royal Sound, which encompasses Beaufort, South Carolina. This is where we were bought as enslaved peoples and distributed throughout the United States, Canada, and the Northern Hemisphere. So there's a very, very rich spiritual and cultural essence here that you don't find anywhere else in the world. I had someone reach out to me last week via YouTube comment, and it was a man who's traveled the world extensively and performed genealogy research on himself and his wife. And he said that he actually traveled to where he was from in West Africa. And after traveling there, came to Beaufort, South Carolina, and said that he had never felt so connected to his ancestors and his lineage. Even after traveling to where his people originated in West Africa, he felt more at home here and felt more of a connection here than he had in any other place. And to me, that was extremely profound, because it just reaffirmed what I've known instinctively and have learned culturally being from here. So yeah, it's a very magical place.
Sounds amazing. Actually, I would like to talk a little bit about how the role of culture in end-of-life decisions. I kind of have a feeling that oftentimes people think it's a one-stop shop and there's religious differences, but culture plays such a key role in our lives, and television kind of homogenizes a lot of us. And so we forget, where do we come from?
Right. And a lot of people, like you said, with television, develop some type of identity with the way that they see themselves represented in the mainstream media without necessarily doing research, either through storytelling with their elders or reading, you know, at libraries. I remember when I was a little girl, I used to love to go to the library and just flip through the articles and the information that was there. But a lot of us build our identity based on what we see on social media and television. But you're absolutely right, especially working in death care. I have to be so sensitive to the cultural nuances of the families that I'm working with, because a lot of times the religions and the cultures go together. But imagine working with traditionally Southern white Baptist family who has cultural ties to Ireland. You know, just there's so many different nuances there. So yeah, you're absolutely right in that. And it affects so many different things, not just with the funeral planning, but the grief aspect, like the way that we interpret and identify with grief and what that journey looks like for us.
I'm a big advocate of healthy grieving, being able to be conscious and aware of death as part of life, and that we have structures around us, whether it's your planning for your death or that when you die, the death care community can make a huge difference in setting the ground for healthy grieving within a family. And so I do think that that starts well before someone dies, but sometimes it really only does after they've died. What do you think can make a difference in terms of a grief journey for a family?
You know, what I've seen and what I've witnessed when working with client families, not just individuals, is that when someone passes away, something inside of us clicks and we want to know more about where we come from. I think grief is the catalyst for that, especially with people that are my age, not quite outside of the millennial generation and not quite, I think it's like Gen Z or what's the next one after that? Yeah. I can't keep up. But like I said, with television and social media, for us, it's like, okay, this is who I am. These are my peers. This is what we do. But then grief kind of snatches us back into reality to say, you know what, there's more to the world than what's inside of this screen that I look at every day. So who am I? Where do I come from? What did my family believe? What did my family want? And then I think something that I've seen shift with COVID and maybe just a little bit before is that there's been like this whole cultural pride explosion where it's not just Black people, it's not just Mexican people, it's not just Cuban people. It's like, you know, we don't have to identify with European standards of beauty, European standards of culture, European standards of anything. I want to celebrate who I am as an individual. And I think grief is also a catalyst for that exploration as well.
This was certainly true when my father died. Is all the stories that people told about him. I realized I didn't really know who he was or where we came from.
Right. I you know what? It's so interesting because you mentioned fathers. Yesterday was Father's Day. And I had the honor of reading my dad's biography for an award that he received through his church for service over the years. Right. And my dad's been my dad for 36 years. Even as an adult, we lived together. It almost felt like I was reading his obituary and he was still alive and seeing him celebrated. And then people coming up afterwards and saying, you have an amazing dad, or he did this to me, or not to me, but, you know, for me, he assisted my son with this and that, or he taught Sunday school with teenagers and we've seen grades improve. And just hearing all of the different stories, like you said, about my dad, it really opened my eyes that, wow, my dad isn't just my daddy. You know, he's a whole entire person with a whole life. And I think that's also a part of it I'm Johanna, is we tend to see each other in the roles that we occupy in life. For example, you see your coworkers as your coworkers. When your coworkers pass away, you go to their funeral, you learn about their families. You learn about their children. You learn about their hobbies. You learn about them as an individual. I think that grief and loss causes us to seek, or just, I don't want to even say seek. It causes us to view one another outside of the roles that we portray in everyday life.
That makes a lot of sense to me. And in a way, you know, COVID itself thrust the world into a grieving process. And I found certainly where I live, but also, you know, because I am connected to a bigger world as well, that people had more time because they were mostly home and or working from home. Our lives were reduced considerably, and the activity of our everyday life was reduced. That I heard and participated in more curious conversations than I had before, because the background static of going shopping, going to a movie, getting together with friends, cooking big barbecues, all of those things, that was gone. And it was really a moment in our time, I think, where we could connect more as a humanity, as a group of people, as a global community almost.
And I don't want to appear to be insensitive to anyone who's lost a loved one due to COVID or suicide or any other type of loss during the pandemic. Honestly believe for humanity, COVID is one of the best things that could have ever happened for us because it made us human again. I think about, even if you think about people who've had to be in the house with their children, their parents, their spouses, I could only imagine you got to know your husband in ways that you maybe had forgotten over the years. If I don't know how long you guys have been married, I'm just making an assumption. I don't know if you have children. Maybe you got to know more about your children as adults or wherever, whatever stages they are in life. Getting forced out of looking at something one-dimensionally and looking at it holistically, I think is just absolutely beautiful. And unfortunately, a lot of times grief is the catalyst for that.
Yeah, grief is the catalyst for that. And I'm also amazed too that when people are thrown into a grieving, the big D, big grieving, often there's so much energy behind it that I have seen people write books and create nonprofits and do all kinds of positive things for the world with their grief energy. And that's fascinating to me as well.
Yeah, I think that speaks to several things. I feel like people are able to do or seem to be more equipped to perform miraculous feats while grieving because we need something to do with that energy. And I talk a lot about that in a course or workshop that I host called the Chakra Grief Workshop, where we explore the chakras and how grief affects each one of the chakras. And if you're not careful, your chakras can become closed. So building rituals around honoring the grief and the way it affects each chakra is important. But it just really makes me think, what would be possible and what would come out of us as human beings if we were taught just to manage that energy from the beginning and not be forced into exercising it upon as like an emotional response? What if that were just our natural protocol? Like, you have these feelings, you have this emotion, you have all of this, because I mean, in essence, we're grieving constantly throughout life, not just when someone passes away. So why is it that when we do experience one of those big griefs, like you refer to it as, then we're prompted to respond in that way?
When I was 19 and I lost my mother, I didn't even know grief was an emotion.
You know what? I'm going to challenge that, if you don't mind.
No.
I had a student attend a workshop, and she said something that changed my perspective so much. She said that grief is not an emotion, it's an experience. And part of that experience are our emotions. And we tend to focus on the emotions of depression and shock. And you know, the common five or seven that we've been taught, right? But there's also bliss. There's also elation. There's also release. There's also compassion on a deeper level than we've ever felt before. So now when I think about grief, I think of it less as an emotional experience, but an experience that encompasses all of our human emotions.
Oh, that is a really great way to think about it. And so is that to be in that time accessible to that full range? Like, what would healthy grieving be from that point of view?
You know what? I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think that whatever your grief looks like, it's healthy. However, your behaviors during that time could be unhealthy. You can be having a completely, I don't want to use the word normal or natural, but you could be experiencing grief, which is experiencing loss, and become an alcoholic. You can be experiencing grief or having the experience of grief and become a Nobel Prize winner. You know, so I don't know that I necessarily believe in the concept of healthy grief. However, I do believe in the concept of healthy and unhealthy behaviors as a response to grief.
Yeah. Well, I think along with that, though, is a cultural agreement, if you will, that grieving is natural. I think what I was reacting to as a 19-year-old person was that people were kind of like, well, get over it.
Really? How did your mother pass away, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, my mother drank herself to death.
So maybe there were some people in your immediate subculture who felt like, well, she did this to herself, so we just need to move on anyway.
Well, that could be. I think more of it was their discomfort with, here's Johanna before death. Here's Johanna processing her mother's death. Right. And that I needed to go through whatever I needed to go through as part of my grief journey, but that they didn't know how to respond to me. Mm. And I think there's that we are awkward naturally around death, that we don't often know, what do you say to someone who's grieving? So the response is, oh, could we just go back to normal? I don't know what, out of discomfort, let's just go back to where we were.
Right.
It's a ever forward, never back.
Ever forward, never back. Yeah, I can definitely see that. And then you mentioned the cultural impact of grief we were talking about earlier, or the cultural acceptance or denial or whatever. I think about what we perceive here in this part of the world to be third world countries, those that are so far behind us technologically and in infrastructure and all those things. However, what they have that we have not seemed to be able to put our minds around on any level is an understanding of the cycle of life. And so their culture is celebration. I've worked with people from Caribbean and other countries where death is celebrated and it's a party. And even though you're sad, you're rejoicing because you know that this person has in some way elevated or progressed into a level that we all aspire towards. So I think even more so the cultural, perhaps maybe it's geographical, but then when it's geographical, it circles back around to being cultural because the culture is so different. Or is it, I mean, this is kind of going out there way in the deep spiritual pool, but could it be that there are just certain parts of the world where the energy of grief flows naturally throughout society? We understand that from birth, we're on a cycle towards death, or they understand that. There's this book, I don't know if you're familiar with Abraham Hicks.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So their work is based very closely on, you know, her downloads and things like that. But she was, or they were impacted by a book called Seth Speaks. Have you ever heard of that book? Okay. I tried to read that book and it kind of freaked me out about 8 years ago, but then I picked it back up not too long ago. And one of the most profound things that I read in that book is from the moment we're born, like we're dying all the time. Like we're just moving constantly towards death. Our cells are dying. Our energy is depleting. Life is nothing more than a constant crawl towards death. Mm-hmm. And who says that that's a bad thing? Mm-hmm. So why should our response to that be so violently sad?
Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. The first film in the When You Die trilogy asked the question, does consciousness continue after death? And I think exactly what you're saying is that things are constantly transforming. Our cells are turning over. I can't remember every however many days or weeks. We're continually not who we were from a biological point of view.
Right. That question, is there consciousness after death? I believe so. I definitely believe so, because I believe that everything is one. And maybe it's not in human form, but the trees have been here a lot longer than you and I have. However, if you're still enough and quiet enough, you can tap into their energy, or the ocean, or the beach, or the sun, or the moon. So why wouldn't there be a continuation for us?
I know that you put it out on your YouTube community about what would 15 seconds of not grief or relief of grief feel like, and what would the button look like? I'm getting that backwards a little bit.
Oh no, if there was a button, you got it on the head. If there was a button that gave you 15 seconds of just relief from whatever your grief experience is for that moment, what would that look like for you?
And so maybe it's those things. Maybe it is a robin that lands on the bird feeder.
Yeah. I think for me, that button would look like just 15 seconds of the sun warming my body outside. Yeah. And then that kind of makes me think as well, we talked about culture. In my culture, we believe that the ancestors, those that have passed on, still communicate with us daily or in any moment, and we can call upon them for guidance and direction and help. There has to be a level of consciousness there if we believe that they're responding to us. Or is consciousness a very limited term for what we can interpret in this realm? Perhaps it's just a state of being that looks different than anything that we can conceptualize. I think the older I get, the more I realize how much unnecessary emphasis we put on our bodies. And I think, just much like how we said grief is the catalyst for looking at others through a lens that differs from their role in our lives, I think age is the catalyst for looking at ourselves through the lens of our essence and not necessarily our physical form, if that makes sense. And I know that there are several cultures throughout the world that put no emphasis whatsoever on the physical body. Like the Tibetan monks, they'll throw the bodies of those that have passed away from the mountain as a sign of the body is nothing. The spirit is free now. There's no fear in us doing this. There's no disrespect or disregard for human life, because this was only the vessel for the form that the spirit took in this realm or this period of time. And now it's free.
I know that there are cultures that, many cultures that like to leave the body after death for a day or 3 days. And I think that's kind of an interesting practice. Have you come across much of that?
Yes, there is a group in Atlanta, and I haven't worked with them specifically as far as caring for their deceased. However, they did reach out to me because they wanted to perform home rituals and vigils and things like that. And I told them it was something that we would happily provide, but I don't think anyone has passed away since that conversation. And so we haven't had the opportunity to actually perform the service. But that was one of the things that they were having a hard time finding, was a funeral home who would allow them to basically access the funeral home for 3 days nonstop, or a funeral director that would be in the home with them for 3 days, just performing their rituals and just letting the body be. I think that's a very, very interesting concept of as well, because I can tell you from personal experience, not like on a ghost or paranormal level, but there is an energy around deceased bodies, especially when we were picking them up from the hospitals and they've passed away a few hours earlier, or retrieving decedents from car accidents or passing away in their home. There definitely is an energy present, and it travels with the body. I don't know whether it is the spirit of the individual, the spirit of the angels and ancestors, the spirit of God. It could be anything. I don't know. You know, I don't want to put a name on it, but I think that there's definitely some validity to that practice. We talked about culture and societal influence. Death care has become so rushed. Like, how many people can we embalm in a day? Or, you know, what's our bottom line? And this person just passed away and we need to get them in and get them in the funeral home and get them embalmed because we have 10 other families coming in today. And I think that there's definitely a need for more pause to allow families to spend time with their loved ones, perform rituals. I encourage families to participate in final cleansings and doing hair and dressing and things like that as much as I can within the law.
Right.
I just think that the process is so rushed. You have to rush into the funeral home and make all these decisions and arrangements, which further complicates that experience of grief.
Right.
Because it's almost like, yes, this person has passed away, but then they're literally being snatched through this process. And I don't think that's good for their energy or ours.
And I think that brings us to another thing that I think that you're a pretty big advocate of is pre-planning.
Oh, definitely. As much as you can. And I want to just clarify that you don't have to have money to pre-plan. Mm. A lot of people shy away in my experience from the conversation because they're like, I don't have the money to do that. Well, it's called pre-planning for a reason. When you get into talking about money, that's called pre-funding.
Right.
So I am a huge advocate of everyone taking autonomy over their end of life decisions as much as we can, because I mean, the bottom line is that anything can happen to anyone. There's a saying that I love, that the leaning tree is not always the first to fall. So someone could literally be on what we identify as their deathbed. We're going to visit and get in a car accident and pass away, and that person's still here. So yes, I encourage people to have conversations about what their desires are. Do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be embalmed? Do you want to be put in the ground? Do you want to be put in a mausoleum? Do you want a more earthy feel or a more contemporary feel to your funeral? Do you want to wear a dress? Do you want to be unclothed with just a sheet on you? There's just so many different nuances that people don't think about, down to the musical selection, the flower colors. Or do you not want any of that? Do you want just something completely still and more rustic? So, yeah.
Because death is also a time for life. It's a real gift, isn't it, to not have your family have to think of those things for the first time ever.
Yes, it is a tremendous gift. And I don't want to say a relief of a burden, but a relief of a burden. But I think more so, let's just take everyone else out of it. It's taking control over what you want. Mm. I teach a course, or I have a course available online called Spiritual Funeral Planning 101. And yes, we go through all of the estate planning terminology and instructions for your funeral and all of those things. I teach you how to do those things. But more than anything, I think what's important is having your spiritual essence represented representing yourself in your true light. Because remember, we talked about how as a mom, maybe you're only seen as mom. Mm-hmm. Maybe your kids don't know, you know, my passion was acting and I became a mom, and mom can't travel to California and star in movies or do whatever. And maybe just having that known will say, oh, give that peace. Like you said, you didn't know who your dad was, really. Wow, I got to learn this about mom. Or you've been a wife for 50 years and your passion was home economics and your family just thought, hey, mom kept a really nice house. But in actuality, my passion was creating safe spaces for people. So really talking about those intangible things is important. And a lot of times we just don't know how to have those conversations with family. So we dive really deep into that, expressing your spiritual essence and sharing your light, even in death.
That's great. That is really, really, really helpful for so many people, myself included. Thank you for that.
Oh, no problem. It's self-study. So at your own pace. And I encourage everybody, you're going to pay for it. Bring your family in on it.
Right. How do you break the ice with your family if you want to have these conversations? Because sometimes people don't want, they're like, oh, no. You're young. You know, that's not going to happen to you.
You know what? I always tell people to break out the family photo albums the next time you're having family dinner. Because I can guarantee you there are going to be people in that photo album who have passed away. And that conversation is going to shift to what this person did not, or remembers about their funeral. Mm-hmm. And if you are a savvy listener, instead of just asking mom or the kids or the husband, hey, what do you want to happen when you die? You start taking little mental notes and asking little just suggestive questions like, oh, I couldn't, they had too much makeup on mom. She didn't even look like herself, or she looked like she was sleeping. Well, you know, she did look like she was sleeping. Is that something that you think you would like, is for us to see you and get the peace of feeling like you were sleeping? Or I just hated being in that church. It was 110 degrees outside and the air conditioner wasn't working. So if you pass away in the summertime, would you prefer that maybe we have a graveside service where we put a tent outside where the breeze is flowing and we all kind of gather at the graveside instead of being in a hot building? So just asking those little prompting questions and making mental notes, and then bringing those little notes back instead of the big question of what do you want to happen when you die?
How do you see your whole business in a way? What kind of direction is the funeral industry, end of life industry, death care industry, whatever label? Where are we going? Do you see things changing a lot, or is it opening a lot, or?
Okay. So I'll answer this from two different angles. One, as my personal journey. Ooh. Two, as my industry observation. I think that the death care industry is opening a lot, which is a good and a bad thing. In the past 2 years, I've seen more individuals pop up who don't necessarily have formal training. Mm-hmm. And myself included in this, I'm not just speaking about others. Like, I am not a mental health professional. I am not a psychiatrist, psychologist. However, I am a sacred grief practitioner. And that was a title installed upon me by my ancestors. And there are many individuals like myself who are providing holistic and spiritual guidance for families, which I think is beautiful. I do worry that without some level of professional backing, there's the potential for more harm than good to be done. For instance, I'm a licensed funeral director, so I can speak professionally from that perspective and incorporate the spiritual guidance from that perspective, right? Mm-hmm. However, if someone just is, you know, saying, you know what, I lost my mom and I want to help others through this process, maybe you're in a state that doesn't recognize what you did for your mom. So you're giving people a sense of false hope. So I think that our industry is going to become a lot more regulated. I think that people in the next 10 to 20 years are going to be seeking resources to deal with a lot of unresolved grief, stemming from the fact that they weren't able to truly practice their cultural traditions due to COVID. There are going to be a lot of mental health ramifications for that, I honestly believe. I don't know what the funeral industry's response to that will be. But I also see, I spoke about this about a year ago, transhumanism is going to change the way that we're trained as professionals. And what I mean by that, there's a lot of technology that's going to be going into the bodies. And our chemicals may not respond the same way with those devices or with that technology in our bodies. And it's going to cause the way that we practice and what death is considered to be to change drastically.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it certainly would affect, wow. I hadn't thought about embalming fluids and human implants and things. I know it can affect cremation, but it is a whole nother way of thinking about what it is to be human, isn't it?
Or what it is to die.
What it is to die.
Like, yeah, I mean, that's just a rabbit hole that we could talk about for another 5 hours, but.
Yeah, I don't at all feel qualified for that one myself, but I'd love to listen to it.
And I think that in itself is going to change cultural, religious, and societal perspectives. And I don't know whether it's going to be for the better or for the worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think one of the other things that's really challenging our end of life scenarios is the fact that medicine is so has come so far that we're able to diagnose many, many potential ways of which a person could die. So you might have dementia as one, but then you've got also got heart disease and a particular kind of cancer and something else, and people having to choose their care at end of life because our sophistication with diagnosing, it really changes a lot of decision-making that, we individually might make or as a family might make.
Very true. I've recently joined the board for an organization called Compassion and Choices. And I think that medical aid in dying is going to become more accessible for those that are suffering at the end of their lives. And not that that's all that Compassion and Choices focuses on, but I think the conversation about autonomy in medical care, I feel like the medical industry and the death care industry seem to be polar opposites, but really they're one and the same because you can't have one without the other. One is truly fighting away from the other and one is in response to the other. Mm-hmm. You talked about medicine, our treatment, not just diagnosis, but treatment is going to be impacted by technology. And again, what is it going to mean to die just because you have heart failure, perhaps your brain and your lungs and your respiratory still work. So is somatic death still going to be a thing 100 years from now? What does it mean to die?
Well, I'm sure we'll find out. Maybe not just with this body at the
Yeah, there's a really cool video on my YouTube page. I had the opportunity to speak with a advocate, participant, and representative for cryonic suspension. And as far-fetched as it seems, I think the cryonic suspension, we're going to find out whether it works or not sooner than we think. And I feel like that is going to change things because if a person passes away and a death certificate is issued because they passed away, but then they're reanimated.
Right.
What I think it ends at like the funeral home, right? Or at the cryonic suspension laboratory. Mm-hmm. But then it's also going to change what birth is defined as if that person is reanimated. Yeah. And then from a spiritual lens, the circle of necessity, the 3,000 year journey that the Egyptians believe the soul went on after passing, and just seeing some of the rituals that have been performed in the past year, like the moving of the mummies from the pyramid to the museum in Egypt, to me was almost like, wow, this journey, perhaps, I don't know where we are in planet time, maybe is completed. And perhaps now reanimation of corpses that were interred in Egypt may take place. I mean, my mind is just so open, so I can go in different directions with this. I don't know how far you want to go.
Well, you know, the thing I love is that we don't really know. I think this is also why I'm so interested in the idea of consciousness, because, well, if you look at near death, someone can be clinically dead now for, I think you could be dead for at least 20 minutes now in a hospital setting where a person has the right conditions on ice and so on. They have brought people back, if you will. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, are they the same? Did something else come back? There's so many things we don't know. It's fascinating. For sure, people who have had near-death experiences are not the same.
No. Even not as far as like near death, but like spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yes, that's right. You don't even have to die.
Right. You don't even have to. Like non-traumatic spiritual awakening, literally. And if you think about like, I'll just use the Bible, for example, perhaps we've taken the literature too literal. I'm reading this book now called The Compendium of the Emerald Tablet by an author named Billy Carson. And he talks about Thoth and how Thoth was reanimated several times throughout history to take on many different forms, that we study these animations historically, but where does this knowledge that these individuals have come from?
Mm.
I don't think this is a new conversation. I think this is definitely our, I don't even want to say error, but it's our season to begin to be open to something that's as old as time.
Yeah.
Our consciousness, I'll use that word, our consciousness has expanded. And I mean, 2020 was full of cosmic and universal and even planetary alignments that have not occurred in thousands of years. Mm. There has to be an impact on our consciousness, on our beings, on our essence. Mm. I don't think that it's just cellular where we have this experience of humanity. It's oneness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I feel like death is just a part of that conversation. I just think our society, our culture, our belief systems have cut off at death. And now it's time for us to understand that there's more.
Mm.
So what happens when we die, right?
It's the great mystery, and it's a beautiful thing to have time to contemplate our, I don't know, might say holiness.
Mm.
I like that word if you think of it from the point of view of a hole,
mm-hmm.
not a hole you would fall down like a rabbit, but a complete, what is it to be complete?
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I know I don't have you forever, and I also know we could keep talking about this because there's a lot in this world that is fascinating to me. And to all of us, I think it's part of the gift in a weird way of having been in lockdown for so long. And also that materialism has gone as far as it possibly could, perhaps. And then we're in lockdown and there isn't a TV set big enough to fulfill all our needs. Well, maybe almost all our needs. So coming back around to, yeah, loss opens us up to so much.
Yeah. It's been so wonderful talking to you. Like, you're right. We could talk about this. I could talk about this for days. Maybe we'll do it again. Maybe I'll have you as a guest on my podcast.
Oh, I'd love it. I'd love it. And yes, and someday perhaps we could have tea together.
Yes.
Joelle, thank you so much. And we'll have all the links to all of your social media and website, and people can see some of these great educational courses that you're offering. And thank you.
Thank you. I'm the Grave Woman everywhere. Just type me in Google. I'll pop up. Thank you for having me.
This conversation is brought to you by the When You Die Project. From existential afterlife questions to palliative care and the nuts and bolts of green burial, if it has to do with death, we're talking about it. When You Die Project.